Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J, and for the next half hour, I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. So keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left. When Marx began the Communist Manifesto with the line, "A specter is haunting Europe," the dense intertextual weaving of horror fiction and political anxiety had already begun. Mary Shelley's father, the anarchist William Godwin, had written a political horror novel titled Things as They Are. Bram Stoker was inspired by his tyrannical boss to write Dracula as a form of sublimated workers' action, and later the Dracula film in 1931 would serve to reinforce anxieties about devious Central Europeans with accents coming to the West with their dangerous anti-religious ideas. The post-war horror film saw nuclear anxiety and red scares writ large in giant insects and alien body snatchers. One of the most enduring and influential horror writers, however, has been H.P. Lovecraft, and his political anxieties were many. As Lovecraft penned the dozens of stories and books that sketched out his Cthulhu mythos, his politics morphed from aristocratic monarchism to New Deal socialism, with a strong dash of racialism and elitism thrown in. To explain who Lovecraft was and how his politics influences his work, or vice versa, I'm speaking today with the leading editor of Lovecraft's work and author of his most authoritative biographies, S.T. Joshi. Mr. Joshi has also written extensively on weird fiction, editing weird fiction journals, and is the author most recently of The Modern Weird Tale, a study of weird fiction since World War II. So tell us a little bit about Lovecraft. He was a native of Providence.
He lived almost his whole life in Providence, Rhode Island, with the exception of 2 years in New York when he was briefly and unhappily married. He identified greatly with Providence and considered himself a New England gentleman of the old school. But he grew up at a time in the 1890s when these notions of social aristocracy were still very strong. And so he developed those ideas. And yet he also developed very early on the idea that the real aristocracy is the aristocracy of intellect. And so he began studies of various kinds quite early. He claimed to have suffered a nervous breakdown really after only 3 years of high school. And for the next 5 years, he became a kind of hermit, a recluse, and that's where he picked up a great deal of his knowledge that would serve him later on. His very, very early juvenilia, when he started writing at the age of 6 or 7, was poetry of a classical sort. For example, he produced a sort of abridgment of the Odyssey in about 88 lines. It's really a remarkable piece of compression.
As a child.
As a child. So he learned the Greco-Roman classics at a very early age. He learned Latin as early as the age of 8 or 9. He had a smattering of Greek, but he developed a great fascination for the 18th century, particularly such poets as Alexander Pope, Samuel Johnson, and of course the prose writers of that period. So his writing, both prose and poetry, always had a sort of archaic cast to them, and really it remained right to the end.
You'd have thought that after John Stuart Mill's nervous breakdown, that parents of an aristocratic education would have learned not to teach their kids Latin and Greek.
You'd think so, but it would seem he learned it largely by himself. In fact, he produced a little translation of a bit of Ovid as early as the age of 10 or so. A remarkable youth. But there's another side to Lovecraft in that he was on one side devoted to belles lettres, but on another side devoted to science. He learned chemistry and astronomy at a very early age and became fascinated with astronomy, particularly from about the age of 12 or 13 onward. And in fact, that he claimed later that developed what he called his cosmic attitude, his notion that the Earth and everything on it was a very transient and insignificant element in the vast cosmos at large.
And alien life formed a great part of his later fiction.
Yes, although in my understanding, I believe those the various extraterrestrial entities that he puts on stage are really symbols. I mean, he obviously didn't believe literally in the existence of such extraterrestrials. They served as symbols for the vast unknown universe of which we can only grasp a very tiny fraction.
Mm-hmm. So he saw himself principally as a poet at first. When did he begin to become a fiction writer?
He really didn't write much fiction until about 1917, when he was in his later 20s. At that time, he'd received some encouragement from colleagues to write fiction, and it still didn't really take to it until the 1920s. Indeed, the foundation of the pulp magazine Weird Tales in 1923 did provide an impetus of a sort, although Lovecraft always felt somewhat embarrassed being published in Weird Tales or in these other pulp magazines, because he realized, frankly, that their readership was of a somewhat low level. He would have liked to have seen the emergence of a high-grade magazine devoted to weird fiction, but the market simply couldn't bear that kind of a magazine, and still can't, for that matter.
Well, what distinguished Weird Tales from the early science fiction that was being written at the time?
Well, Weird Tales really was the only magazine at the time devoted to pure horror and the supernatural. Lovecraft later appeared in some of the science fiction magazines when his work took a more scientific cast, but his early work was quite supernatural, very derivative of Poe in many regards. He regarded Poe as his god of fiction, as he called him once. And again, that early work looks backward rather than forward. It looks back to the 19th century and his influences, Poe, Ambrose Bierce, Arthur Machen, and some of these other writers. So Weird Tales really was, by necessity, his only viable professional market for this early work.
Now, he was not very popular during the course of his writing career. When did his popularity begin to grow?
Well, it's funny. In 1937, when he died, Lovecraft really had only one book of his stories ever published, and that had appeared the year before, a really wretched small press publication of The Shadow Over Innsmouth. So I'm sure that when he died, he was convinced that his work would simply lapse into oblivion, lost in the pages of these crumbling pulp magazines. But he had developed such strong ties with friends and colleagues that two writers named August Derleth and Donald Wandry took the effort to resurrect Lovecraft's work, save it from these pulp magazines, and publish it in book form by forming the publishing company Arkham House. And since 1939, Arkham House has been perhaps the leading publisher of Lovecraft's work. It's an amazing story how this little-known writer has now become a sort of a popular culture icon, if you want to call it that. I think Lovecraft really took off when paperback editions began to appear, really in the 1970s, with Valentine Books. That really ensured his popularity, because they received tremendously wide distribution, sold in the millions of copies. And now Lovecraft is disseminated around the world in translation and other editions.
I'm speaking today with S.T. Joshi. He's the principal biographer and editor of Lovecraft, H.P. Lovecraft. Now, what were the principal themes of his fiction? And was the Cthulhu mythos throughout his fiction, or was this just a minor part of his fiction?
The Cthulhu mythos is very difficult to specify, and I am one of the scholars who maintain that it is not as important to Lovecraft's work as many others believe. In fact, it should be noted that Lovecraft himself never came up with the term Cthulhu mythos. That was coined by August Derleth only after Lovecraft's death. He had some idea, of course, that he was evolving a sort of what he called a pseudo-mythology in some of his work, not all, but in some of his major tales. He sometimes referred to it whimsically as Cthulhuism or Yog-Sothothery, which suggests that he didn't take it as seriously as many have later. My belief is that what Lovecraft was doing here was creating what one scholar, David E. Schultz, has called an anti-mythology. By that I mean this: the purpose of most mythologies and religions is, as it were, to reconcile humanity with the universe. That is to say, to explain the place of humanity within the confines of space and time. Lovecraft reverses that by saying, whereas religion says, yes, human beings are at the center of the universe, both and are the special product of the benevolence of an all-powerful God, Lovecraft says, no, human beings are completely insignificant. They are at the mercy of these titanic forces that really care nothing about them and that can brush them aside and destroy them without even a moment's thought. Lovecraft himself was indeed an atheist. He claimed to become an atheist as early as the age of 5. One doesn't know if that's really the case or not, but certainly by his teenage years, and under the influence of astronomy and some of the philosophers he was reading, like Nietzsche and Bertrand Russell, he evolved a very strong atheist tendency. Now, in fact, it might seem a paradox that Lovecraft created all these gods and monsters in his stories, and yet was an atheist. But as I say, these gods really are symbols for all the mystery of the universe, and they are not to be taken literally. So in many ways, his fiction does embody an atheist outlook.
Although there may be some supernatural aspects, it's really a fundamentally a materialist set of stories in the sense that they're not ghosts. They're usually monsters of some kind that have some kind of psychic power over mankind.
Absolutely. Lovecraft very early realized that many of the standard conceptions in horror fiction, like the ghost, the haunted house, werewolves, vampires, had become completely stale and lacking in any sort of symbolic value. He realized that he had to create completely new entities in order to get the points across that he wished to get across. Therefore, yes, many of his monsters are simply extraterrestrials that obey laws of entity that we are simply unfamiliar with. I think his greatest achievement in this regard was in The Color Out of Space, where we have very little idea of what the entity or entities in that story really are, but they have a profound influence upon humanity as they come into contact with human beings.
I suppose the great exception to what we're saying is the Necronomicon, which has assumed a bizarre cultic status among occultists who believe that it actually exists. What was the Necronomicon?
One cannot. I mean, Lovecraft is not responsible for what has been done in his name, but.